Did you know that the best place to view the project is through the website theythemproject.org? It's the only place you can see all the photos, videos, and podcast interviews, and easily share the project to help it be seen and make a difference. In addition to the website, They Them Project is everywhere. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or Google Play. Remember, the project grows and informs only when it is shared by people like you. Go to theythemproject.org and share what you see and hear. Hello, my name is Brent Dundor. I'm a full-time photographer, activist, and ally, and the proud producer of the They Them Project. They Them Project interviews non-binary individuals, offering a platform for them to be seen and heard while informing and educating everyone on how words and actions affect the trans plus community.
Hello, my name is Hal. I'm a really cool trans person who likes to do theater, and I use they, them, or he, him pronouns.
Hi, Hal. Thank you for being here, and thank you for sharing your pronouns with me. My name is Brent, and I use he, him, his pronouns. Hal, would there ever be a time that you would be upset if someone asked you what pronouns you use?
I would never be upset if someone asked me what pronouns I used. Nope, okay. I wouldn't.
So you said that you use he, him, and they, them pronouns. Do you prefer specific pronouns in certain places or instances, or do you use both at any and all times?
Yeah, I use they, them. That's what I prefer to use. It's what feels the best to me, particularly with friends and people I'm close to and just in general. I use he, him more as a tool because I'm an actor and I play lots of men. I also do things like drag where I'm a king and I'm a lot of times presenting masculinely or as men in certain spaces. So particularly in the performative aspect is when I use he as more of a tool in rehearsal spaces and also performance spaces because I'm often not playing people who are non-binary, but as like a personal choice, I do prefer they, but he also feels good to me because I'm also trans masculine. And so, but I definitely, they is what I use on a personal one-to-one basis.
So today, is it more appropriate for me to use they, them pronouns?
Yeah, it's more appropriate to use they, them because I'm talking to you, we're chatting, it's personal. And yeah.
But then just to go a little further with the question, because I've started to ask this when people use different sets of pronouns. Mm-hmm. So if we were if you were performing and I saw you out performing, would you prefer that I use he, him pronouns then?
I personally, if people know I use they, I prefer they. But if they were to use he, I wouldn't be upset. I usually use he because I'd rather be read as he than misgendered as she. And oftentimes I think I present masculine and people, especially people who aren't used to using they, can wrap their heads around the fact that I'm performing as a man. And so it's a way of using he as a way to affirm that I'm trans, even if it's not totally accurate. And so people who know me will use they when I'm in performance, but when I'm playing a man, if someone walks away going, oh, he did blank this, that, and the other thing, it would feel better to me, go, oh, why was she playing a man? It's like, it's more accurate that I'm playing a man than that I'm a woman playing a man. And so using he, if there's audience members who don't know me, feels right too, because it's not incorrect. I am doing that. I am performing being a man and I'm not a woman playing a man in those situations. I'm very much a man playing a man or a masculine person playing a man or really a non-binary person playing a man. But so it's really, and that's why I say it's a tool. I see he is like a tool because it's a way to gesture at or talk about the experience I'm living, particularly as a performer who plays people who aren't my gender very often, and to affirm my transness, even when it's not totally accurate, and which is why I use they as a personal thing, because people who know me get that, and the people who don't sometimes have a harder time figuring out that dichotomy where I'm they but I play men and how that works.
How much responsibility do you think should be put on others to ask your pronouns or for you to tell them your pronouns?
I think I often will say my pronouns because I know if I don't tell people that they won't know, but I also know that if I'm in spaces where people ask for them, if it's a new place I'm working, if I'm getting to know new people, I feel like I'm actively being included in that space and not an afterthought in that space. And so while I do think that if someone doesn't ask me, I'm going to say it because I want to be gendered correctly and I feel safe doing so in the spaces I'm in oftentimes, but the taking the step to ask beforehand makes me feel like people are making the effort to include trans people actively in their space and not doing, oh, I guess you're here, we'll deal with it. So while it is partly, I feel like, something I need to bring up, I also feel like making this step to do it and have other people do it correctly is also, or have other people ask for it, is a way that you can craft space for trans people in a more active way.
How long have you used they, them, or he, him pronouns?
I've used they, them pronouns for a year now. I've started using he for probably about 6 months now.
Was it just through performance that you started using he, him pronouns? Or is that what started it?
It was partly that. It was also partly when I first came out, I was able to wrap my hand around, I'm not a girl, but I was able to wrap my hand around, oh, maybe I'm a boy. And so like it was in that in-between space that always made sense to me, that it was fluid, it moved, it wasn't necessarily a fixed thing as a man or a woman. And so I started to use he more as I started to realize that I started to identify more with being trans masculine as opposed to non-binary, although I do very much identify with non-binary. It was really me coming to terms with me also seeing myself as more of a masculine person and getting more and more comfortable with that and understanding my identity in a different way, that starting to use he, him came up as well, and understanding that feels good to me as well. And that a lot of time, people struggled with they, and that I was like, I'm going to give you a binary option. Like, if you can't, you know, wrap your head around they, because I get there's a learning curve. I'm going to give you a binary option because like I was having a really hard time with being misgendered as she all the time when people couldn't figure out they. And so he was an option for me to use as a protective measure in a way. And that's how that shifted.
When do you think you first started thinking about gender? Can you tell me a bit about what led up to that, possibly your childhood and how it led to now?
Yeah, I grew up in like the suburbs, which is pretty gender normative place for the most part. And I didn't even know that trans people existed until I went to college when I was 18. And so for me, theater was always it was a place where I could be safely trans before I knew I was trans. When I did theater from the time I was in like middle school, and then even more so in like late high school, I would be frequently cast as men in plays or as sort of gender neutral characters. So like, there's too many girls in the cast, so I guess we'll have you play the prince in Romeo and Juliet, that sort of thing. And so these gender neutral or men that or male characters I was playing was just, and I felt really comfortable and good, and it made sense to me, but I had no word for that. I didn't know that was an option or anything I could do on the outside. In my outside life, I presented very femininely. I had very long hair. I had dresses. I wore jewelry. I wore makeup. And that wasn't false for me, but it was also very much like, oh, I think this is what I should be doing. Like, everyone says I'm a girl. I think this is what I probably should be doing. And not having any language to articulate the way being in rehearsal and playing men made me feel in a way that me presenting on the outside of my life never quite rang true in a way, but I had no way to describe that or know it was even an option. And so it really started with, for me, for theater and performance and learning too that like as an actor, I could watch boys and understand how they move and figuring out that gender is something we learn and that I could observe and change my behavior and my body language and how I carried myself to present in different ways also made me start to really question like what's the deal with this gender stuff? Like, what's going on here? Even though I had no vocab for it. And so that really led into then college, which then I was like figuring stuff out when I was on my own. And then I did, again, a play where we talked about how we related to femininity, and everything I said was basically, I'm not feminine and I'm not a woman, and not quite those words. And it took other people going, like, is something going on here? And I was to really click in my brain that, oh, maybe something is going on here that's not just acting, and that I don't have to keep playing a woman in my life the way I play men on stage. I can carry that also into my life. For in non-binary and transmasculine, I often use like calling myself a man as a sort of easy language for it, since so many things are binary. But yeah, that's where it started. It really was through performance for me and understanding how these things shift and change and are constructed, and that we very much construct, and learning, unlearning that gender is natural and that we aren't just born these ways. We learn these behaviors, and that I could choose to make whatever combination of behaviors I wanted was very much through theater and performance that I figured that out.
I think that's beautiful. Before we started the interview, we were talking about the fact that you are finishing school in the acting program through the U, right?
Yeah, the BA theater arts program. There's also a BFA acting program. I do the I'm in the BA program, performance creation. So,
And the fact that, I mean, I studied theater in college as well, and that started in high school. And yeah, it's always been a safe place for GLBT, and I hesitate to say T because I didn't have that experience through theater, but it completely makes sense that it would be the case. And I'm just trying to touch on the fact that, like, in certain spaces, how welcoming certain things are, and that theater is a beautiful place for that.
Yeah, and theater is an interesting place because I find that theater is both, like, incredibly safe, but then, like, often the stories we put on stage don't reflect how inclusive we are. We can be as people, which I, like, struggle with as, like, a trans actor. Like, I did a play this, I was in the Minnesota Fringe Festival this summer, and I did a show, it's based on the play Twelfth Night by Shakespeare. I like really like Shakespeare. And it's a story about this woman who dresses as a man to disguise herself. And I was like, that sounds trans. and so we did it. Me and the people I collaborated with did it in a way that we told the story of a trans person discovering that maybe they're a man at the end. And at the end, they don't want to go back to wearing their women's clothing, like happens in all the productions. And I found this, I ran into this thing with the audience where there's people who got it, especially trans people. And then there were people, especially cisgender people, who like really got caught up in like not seeing me as trans, or like, or not understanding that I was trans, or that I wasn't a woman playing a man. And I've had that happen a lot when I go on stage. There's a lot of negotiation with the audience where the people who get it. Like they understand, they like, oh, I see what's going on here. But there's other people who really are like, why is that girl playing a boy? And I'm like, I mean, you're not okay. Like, and so it's theater is really interesting because it's both a really inclusive space and like a really, it's been so instrumental in me understanding my gender and also seeing other people on stage performing gender. At the same time, I never saw a trans person on stage growing up. And so it took me, I think it would have been like totally like mind altering if as a 15-year-old I had saw like a trans man on stage, and I never did. I saw women playing men sometimes. I was like, well, maybe I can do that forever. But it's interesting that I just don't see trans people in theater anywhere. So it's like it's a weird like dichotomy that we like both are super inclusive and also really struggle with how do we put trans bodies and trans experiences and trans people on stage that's respectful and not exploitative and is like telling something other than, oh, I'm transitioning, which is important, but it's like not all trans is. And so it's just an interesting struggle I find as a trans actor, and the way audiences who are largely cisgender respond to my body is like very, I'm often having to do a job of both actor and negotiator of the space.
The idea of are you playing a role, and in that role, what are you playing, is a whole different dynamic. If people are having a hard time understanding someone who is non-binary or trans in real life, it would be it could be a learning experience, but also a challenge for them to understand what they're watching on stage.
Yeah. And it's also really interesting because I find it so funny that I can like walk on stage and we can all accept that I'm a man. But then when I walk off stage, we can't accept I'm a man anymore. So I'm like, what shifted? Like, what are we not agreeing on anymore that you could see my body and my voice on stage and understand me as a man or as non-binary or as gender non-conforming? But then when I walk off stage, suddenly that goes away. And I've been trying to, as someone who's like a young actor and figuring this out and don't have many mentors in theater who are trans, it's something I've just had to grapple with and like try to find answers for quickly so that I could like keep doing this as best as I could. But it's an ongoing, I don't know. There's lots of things I'm learning really quickly about being trans on stage that's, I find frustrating and also really illuminating and exciting all at the same time. So
you had actually contacted me to be part of this project, and I think you did that like at least three or four times.
Yeah.
And I've been intrigued and interested. But I also like the fact that you kept contacting me. I was like, okay, this has to happen.
Yeah.
So tell me why. Like, what does this mean to you?
So I kept contacting you because I think telling stories about trans people and non-binary people is so important. Like I said, I don't see very much like trans, I don't see stories about trans people. I see stories about like trans bodies and like the absurd or like, well, could you believe this from these very much like cis dominant narratives of trans people. But I don't see trans people being given the space to really talk about what they're experiencing, and showing a multiplicity of stories about trans people is just rare. And so like, especially as an actor and someone who makes theater too, and is very much believes in this power that stories have to dictate what is normal and what is natural in our social like world, I find when you can have trans people telling their stories and that they might look like possibility to someone who didn't know that that was an option before, is immensely important. Like that as a trans, like I said, if some trans or gender nonconforming kid in the audience can look at me and go, oh, I didn't know I could do that. I didn't know I could choose to live like that. I didn't know that was an option. I mean, that's why I continue to do plays, and that's why I continue to try to tell stories, because I think, and also seeing then that there's these trans people who are just like people living their lives, who have like, who are worthy of love and have friendships and things they love to do, and are certainly have like struggles and things. I think it's also really important to see trans people who are just allowed a breath of emotion, like a wide berth of emotion, and are able to be, have joy despite or because of being trans, and not because it's all sad and awful. And so I'm really here for trans storytelling, and like really, and so that's why I was so insistent upon doing the interview. Oh, yeah. So, because I really believe in storytelling as one of the best ways to humanize people, and like, because like you, trans people are seen, I think, as impossible. Like we couldn't possibly exist, but we are possible, and we make things possible out of the impossible. And so I think part of that is telling stories and be like, well, I exist. Like I'm not going away. Like you can pretend like I don't exist, but like, what? Poof, I'm gone. Like, no, I'm still here. Like, and you pretending like I'm not trans doesn't change anything. And so I think just living and telling your truth is one of the best ways to combat the erasure of trans people and the suppression of trans people.
And I did you find the project through somebody else that was part of the project, right? Mm-hmm. And that was Dot or Rue, correct?
Correct.
They were just here, and I redid their portrait because of a gallery that's going to be happening, and that's why I've told you about this off camera as well. But what was so unique, given the opportunity that they were coming for another portrait, and the fact that they had a recent name change. I asked them questions on microphone that's going to be part of a podcast and everything as well. That leads into another question that I ask everyone. So have you, Hal, have you always gone by Hal?
I have not. I changed my name over the summer on my birthday, so I've not always gone by Hal.
All right. So what does Hal mean to you?
Yeah. So I have two names. I have two pronouns and two names. So I use Hal just like familiarly, and then also my legal name, my professional name, whatever, is Henry Ellen. I use Henry Ellen because I used to go by Ellen, and it's my birth name, and it's also my great grandma's name. And so it was really important to me to keep that history, and also that like femininity in my name was really important as like a reminder of my own history. And then I chose Henry because it sounded good with Ellen, but I chose Hal because I'm a huge Shakespeare nerd, and I named myself after Prince Hal from Henry IV, Part 1, and I wanted to be named after royalty. So that's why my name is Hal, because I wanted to be a prince. So, and I also like, it also had similar sounds to L and Hal, and but there was also just that element of, I'm going to be royalty, so there, which is also part of the choice of Hal, which is also my drag name, which is Prince Hal, so, okay.
Can you give an example of a time when someone challenged your gender and how that made you feel?
Well, I feel like one of the things, I mean, the first thing I think of just generally is when I first came out, I had a lot of well-meaning people try to be like, no, you're not trans, like anything but trans. Like you can be a girl who does that. And I'm like, you're not wrong. Like you're right. But there's also a general sense especially when I first came out, I was trying to work through this, that people were like, but you're not trans, which was like a very, I feel like insidious mindset, because it was implying to me that like to be trans was to be worthless. And so that challenge has put me very much on a defensive, it makes, and like, oftentimes will shut down where I can't start to have a conversation with someone about my experience. Because what I find is in those moments, they're denying I exist, not learning about my existence. And so I often say, I'm like, I'm willing to have any conversation about being trans or non-binary. I'm happy to talk about my experience, even if you feel like they're basic questions. But the one thing I will not do is have a conversation with someone who denies that I exist. Like, we have to agree I exist before we can have a conversation. And then I'm happy to share. And that's very much come out of this challenging, especially when I first came out and didn't have all the language of to talk about myself that was really hard and has made me understand from this, put me on the defensive so that I feel like I have to know what to say and the right thing to say, and it's very high stakes. Like, if I don't have the answers, who else is going to tell that person? You know, there's trans people everywhere, so they might learn, but also I'm often the only trans people in these spaces. I'm often the only trans people they know or person they know. And so it taught me that I have to know what to say and how to say it. And that's frustrating because a lot of people don't have access to that kind of language or don't connect to language that way. Like, I love language, but also a lot of people don't. And I find that immensely frustrating, but it's something I learned. And it can be really tough. It can make you shut down. I find when I misgender, I check out. And so when I get misgendered or people, and that's a way that I feel like my gender is challenged, when they keep repeatedly calling me something I'm not. And I feel like that takes me out of whatever I'm doing. So I have to think about, how am I going to talk to this person? What am I going to say to them? How do I put it in a way that they don't get defensive? How do I like reassure them they're going to learn, but also like reassure, like let them know that's important, you get it right. And so then it very much takes me out of my ability to just be present and do the work I'm doing or exist with the people I'm existing with, because I have to be negotiating how to have this conversation now with someone who is just not getting it, or is choosing to just like kind of gloss over it, which happens a lot too. So yeah, it's not a good feeling. It's hard to explain. It's like if someone pronounced your name wrong all the time and you just like never corrected them.
Can you give an example of a time when someone validated your gender and how that makes you feel?
One, drag is amazing. I'm a drag king, and like I get paid to just like be explore masculinity in like different ways, and like in ways that are hopefully like, and to find different forms of masculinity that are like not toxic, and to figure out different ways to do it. And like, I have two people I do drag with, and we're all kings, and we're like a boy band. And so it's like very much, we affirm each other's choices and help each other create things out of masculinity. And it's just like the best feeling, because it's like, yeah, you want to do that? That can be masculinity, sure. And so it's like, it's just a beautiful feeling. And then also there was, my friends who are there when I'm like, when people are misgendering me, and they like I can walk up to them and say, it's ridiculous that they don't see this, right? And they can agree with me, or they'll even like my friends will sometimes accidentally misgender me, instead of being like not noticing, they'll be like, what? Like, why did it, just the affirmation that you misgendering me was so wrong, because that's not who you are, is like such an affirmation to me when I'm among like my friends too.
How often do people ask you what pronouns you use?
Not frequently. I usually bring it up. Some classes do at the, I go to school at the U, and some people do in classes, most people don't. Some theater spaces are being better about it, but I'm often the one bringing it up, so.
Does it ever happen? People oftentimes use the example of a coffee shop. Like, that could be the one time when someone might ask what pronouns you use. Does it happen when you go to the bank or to any, like getting tickets at a, before a movie, or like any, has it ever happened that someone has asked your pronouns outside of like a school space?
No. Like, I mean, in spaces where I'm just passing through once, it never happens. In which case I kind of get, cause you're passing, you don't know my name either, you know? So why would you know my pronouns? And so I feel like in those just pass through spaces, I'm not asked that, cause I'm also not asked my name, and that makes sense. But just like avoiding gendering then is like good.
Because I always ask the times where someone misgenders and times where people gender you correctly or ask you pronouns. But I'm trying to get more into the fact that like I really want people to understand this is like this, and you've been saying it, but this isn't just a thing that can hurt you once a week. It's many times a day.
Yeah.
And it's regular. People need to think of this as that, not as something that is appropriate at times. It's always a good thing to consider.
That's like, it's so true. And that's why I find like one of the first things I tend to tell people, like my friends when I was coming out or like when they're asking like, what can we do? Like, what can we do? And I was like, one of the first things you have to do, I feel like, is start to unlearn how you gender people you walk by. Like one of the first things we do when we see someone is we decide if they're a man or a woman. And one of the first things you got to do is like, let that go and like understand that you actually don't have a right to that information. And like someone who you think looks like a man might not be, someone you think who looks like a woman might not be. And that's like really hard at first. Like, and I had to unlearn that, and I'm non-binary and trans, and just learning to like let go of the necessity of gendering anyone I see was very liberating. And also then helped me to like start to ask questions about like, actually, I don't know. And like, maybe someone can look like that and be a different gender. And then it helped me be less resistant to people saying pronouns that might not fit with what I think is right, because it's not, it is right. Whatever they say is their pronouns is what's right. And so that was like one of the first things, I think, because it is, it's persistent. It's like when you go to a coffee shop, when you go to a restaurant, I work in customer service as like a host and as a server, happens all the time. And it happens on stage, and it happens anywhere I go. It happens with strangers. And so like just like letting go of that necessity to make an assumption about someone's gender is like the first thing you have to unlearn. And it's a habit, like any habit, so it takes time. But that's the big thing I know I've told people when I was first coming out, and when they're like, what do we do? And so
something that I believe you had on your jacket, and I've seen many times through the interview, mm-hmm. But I've never actually commented on, is your buttons that you have on your jacket. Mm-hmm. Tell me about those buttons. Yes. And what that should be a sign for people.
Yeah, so on my jacket, I have two sets. I have two buttons, one that says they, them, and one that says he, him. And I keep them up here so you can see them. And it's just a way that I can let those buttons do work for me. And that hopefully if people pick up on them, they avoid calling me she. It might mean they avoid gendering me, but that's better than them just assuming I'm a woman. And so that's just for me, is again, it's a tool. It's a way I can put on a little bit of armor and let something else do work for me. Because if I had set up ways for me to combat being misgendered that were habit or were with help from my friends or were these just buttons, I would be exhausted. It was all I would do all day. Like if I just tried to not get people to misgender me, I would do nothing else all day. And so the buttons are a way for me to signal to other people if there's something that says pronouns, that's probably the pronouns, it's definitely the pronouns the person uses. Like if you see those, use those pronouns. Like that's why they're there. And so that's just been an effort for me to let these do the work for me. So I can just exist and not be so caught up in being misgendered and being called something I'm not. So
then in relation to the last question I asked, how often is it that you have those buttons, someone looks at them, they smile, they use those pronouns, or mm-hmm. how often is it that how often does it happen that, what are those buttons? Question.
No one asks about the buttons. And I honestly don't know who picks up on it and who doesn't. I feel like the times I get misgendered is when I'm not wearing the jacket. So I mean, I can't like print it on my forehead, you know, but sometimes I feel like I should like they on my forehead. But I think, I don't know. I hope that it does the work, but it's hard to say because I'm usually in transit when I'm moving through places when I have a coat on. And another thing I did is like I had it on my backpack or the bag I carried around all summer as well for a while. But a lot of times it's not in those moments you're carrying your bag or wearing your coat. It's when I'm sitting down at a restaurant or anything. And so I don't know how effective they are, but it's like it's an effort on my part to like try to avoid it. And no one's asked about them, but I also think they can't hurt. So I keep them around, and it also gives just me a sense of like security in myself. And I'm like, yep, that's me. That's who I am, you know, and that's helpful as well.
What can people do to make the world a better place for trans and non-binary individuals?
I think step one is that if someone tells you they're trans or uses certain pronouns, believe them and do it. Also, then along with that is like centering the trans people who are the most marginalized, because if we fight with those people and center those voices, it's going to be better for all of us, trans and cis and whoever. And so that's really important as well. And then also, like I said, I'm an actor, so I think stories are important. So telling, listening to people, trans people sharing their stories, sharing this project, because there's a multitude of trans voices, and that's not something you see. You can see like one trans voice in a lot of stories. But here you can look at a lot of trans voices, and sometimes you just need to, as a trans person or as a non-binary person, just see that person who is like you in a very specific way. And this is a project that can do that. And so can supporting all sorts of trans stories. And so that's another way to really hear and uplift trans voices, which I think is key in making the world better for trans people.
You said to fight with and kind of push forward the people who are most marginalized. Mm-hmm. It kind of relates to a question that I've been asking people through the project just recently, mm-hmm. of what do you think it means, either for the positive or for the negative, for the fact that I'm a cis individual doing this project?
Right. I think that this is a great medium for a cis person to support trans people, because you're sitting here giving a platform and uplifting the voice of a trans person. I have cis friends like that too, who they find their position in supporting trans people by giving platform, giving space, by understanding the space they have as a cisgender person and the space they hold, and opening up that space to actively uplift and support trans voices. So I think that a cis person doing a project like this is perfectly in the realm of how do you uplift trans voices? How do you share trans stories? And so just being curious and being willing to listen is that's the work of any ally or person in solidarity with a group of people. And so I think it's very appropriate. And that makes sense to me.
Do you feel that race plays into gender identity and acceptance of someone's gender?
Absolutely. Oh my God. Yeah. Because the gender binary inherently is a product of colonialism and is a product of Western European ideals. And so inherently the gender binary is something that white people can fit into. I could play into an acceptable version of gender. And because it's very much centered around these Western European ideas of what it looks like to present as a woman or a man. So race completely does, because I think people of color are already seen as not performing gender correctly, because that's not something it was created by people who are white to begin with, this idea of the gender binary and what it means to be an acceptable woman or acceptable man. And I think that plays into queer and trans spaces as well. Absolutely, about who is an acceptable body in trans spaces and who passes and who does all of this. And that's just not that's not something that a lot of people can attain for a lot of different reasons. It's a very insidious idea, this idea of passing or looking cis, because it's inherently bound up in white-centric ideas of gender to begin with. So race absolutely plays a part in whether you are accepting your gender or are seen. On top of just if you're a trans person who's a person of color, you're also having to combat racism and how that plays into your gender, whereas I as a white person do not. I have to think about being trans, I have to think about being queer, I don't have to think about being white, because if I can pass on stage as a conventionally attractive white guy, I can get roles. I understand that. And it's very much, again, about to us as trans people, especially white trans people, again, centering the voices that are the most marginalized. And as a white trans person, that means uplifting trans people of color's voices. And so that's part of it as well.
Ultimately, what we're referring to is privilege. And
yes,
this project, I keep reiterating what this project is doing for me just recently through podcasts, and most recently what I'm learning through this project is a whole different level of privilege that I never understood. And the way that you put it was unique, and made me think about it even more. To not have to think about something mm-hmm. means that you have a privilege. Yeah. That's a really good way to put it. I don't have to think about what it feels like to be Black. I don't have to think about what it feels like to be trans. Mm-hmm. I mean, that also goes back to the question that I have of, is it appropriate for me to be doing this project? And what we also said was, I'm not telling the stories, but if I don't have to think about something, I shouldn't be telling that story.
Right.
I think that's kind of where we're getting at.
Right.
To combine everything.
Yeah. I think people who don't have to think, it's funny because there's a lot of cis people who play trans people. And I'm besides just don't do that, that character is going to be so much more less interesting because a cis person has to do all of the work of just like, what does it mean to live as a trans person? Whereas if I am a trans person playing a trans character, it's going to be so much more nuanced and interesting, not because I'm a better actor, but because I already know what it means to be trans and I can really get at who is this person and what is the experience they're living. And so, yeah, if you don't know it, like, you can do all the research you want, but you're going to have to do all of that legwork that someone who's living this experience already knows. And yeah, just not, I mean, that's privilege. It's not so much like, because I think people can bristle at like, I'm benefiting, but it's like, you just don't have to think about it. And that's reduces so much stress. Like,
one of the things that I want everyone to understand from this project is that everything starts with intent. Mm-hmm. You've talked about people who repeatedly misgender you, even when you're telling them that they're wrong in doing so.
Yeah.
There's plenty of times during this project and outside of it where I make a mistake with someone's gender. Mm-hmm. And to be completely honest, it crushes me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then I always look to the person and I'm like, oh my gosh, I do a project on this. I should not have made that mistake. I feel horrible about mm-hmm. that. And they're just like, okay, well, let's move on because it's okay. Everything comes with intent and how much do you want to respect somebody?
Right.
And that's like the core of what I'm trying to say through this project.
Right. Well, because the thing with me being I don't think a lot of people maliciously misgender me. And they always are like good intention. And it's just about like, oh yeah, I made a mistake. We're going to move on now. And like, okay, yeah, thank you. Great. Cool. Now we know, you know? And so it's very like, no one's usually malicious, but it's just, yeah, the way it affects or denies someone is it's the impact, right? And that's, you know, yeah.
You have said that there are people who repeatedly misgender you. And most likely those people are not trying to hurt you by doing that. But at the same time that there is intent and that plays a role in the way that someone's going to feel about being misgendered, sooner or later, it's not okay. It just isn't okay. And you have to catch up and you have to get it. And it is not anyone else's responsibility to apply that knowledge and lose that ignorance. And that's what I learned and I'm still learning through this project.
And that's the thing too, is like, I totally understand there's a learning curve, but at a certain point, we reach a certain point, I'm like, you need to learn faster because this still hurts like this. And the impact is still the same, whether or not you're intending or not, you know, I understand learning curves, but most there's, you know, at a certain point, like, we should have learned this by now. We should know this. And so, yeah, I totally agree.
And ultimately, people really have to understand that if they continuously do it mm-hmm. when someone is correcting them, mm-hmm. you are disrespecting them mm-hmm. to a core, like to their core.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. I feel that most people are well-intended and good people, good-hearted. And then that just, all that speaks on is the level of ignorance behind everything. Mm-hmm. And you have to go inside yourself and understand, okay, if you want to be a good person, if you don't want to hurt somebody,
right,
then you have to catch up with it.
Yep.
And if you don't, you are deciding that it's okay to hurt somebody.
Yeah. And I think where people get caught up is they don't even like, I can say like, this hurts, but like some people don't even, cause they can't understand how misgendering can hurt. And so that's where people get caught up. But I totally agree. I'm like, you have to, if you want to respect trans people, you just got to do it. Like, you got to learn. And like, why stop learning? So what have you learned about your gender in this process?
It takes a lot of effort to think about what that means for me. Mm-hmm. For like, I know that if someone tells me that, oh, wow, well, you're a big guy, you have a beard, you're so this.
Right.
Anytime that there's a part of this after that, mm-hmm. it makes me feel weird, actually.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be that, the thing that you're trying to honor or like say is more than something else or whatever. So really quick, what advice would you have for someone who's having a hard time remembering, understanding, respecting mm-hmm. somebody's pronouns or gender?
Practice when they're not around and do it. And just be, it's going to take like you just gotta like let go of the habits and rebuild a new one. And that's all it is learning a new habit and practice, because that's how you build new habits.
What advice would you give to your younger self or to youth who might be questioning their gender identity?
You know you best. You know you. And if you feel like you are, you say you are trans, or you feel like you are a certain gender, you are. And that if you say that now and it shifts, that's okay. And that also find the people in your life who are going to affirm your agency and your choice to understand yourself better. And it's gonna be okay. Like, it's all good. Like, there's so many cool trans people, and like, you don't see them at first, and because like all sorts of different social things, but like, we're out here, and like, there's really cool trans people doing awesome stuff who have joy and like live their lives, and like, it can be hard. It can totally be hard. And but like, ultimately, you're crafting your life the way you want to, and you're making those decisions to live really intentionally, and that's going to be like better in the long run, and that's going to be really helpful.
What advice do you have for parents who might have children who are questioning their gender identity?
Believe them and support them. Ask questions, do research, find other parents who have trans kids and learn, and support them and affirm them. And if it's a phase, it's a phase. We all have phases of all kinds. I used to play soccer. I don't do that anymore. Like, it's support them and affirm them and learn and understand that you don't know what they're going through, but like, make the effort to understand.
Is there anything else you would like to say to anyone listening?
Trans people are great. I think we're really cool. That's all. That's all I'm going to say. I think it's so fun. I love being trans. That's all.
They Them Project grows and informs only when it is shared by people like you. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast channels on iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Instagram and Facebook. The best place to view all of the project is theythemproject.org. It is here that you can see all of the photos, videos, and podcast interviews, and easily share the project to help it make a difference.